It's Derby Day Blues for the Ewes as that lot from up the road leaves CB5 with all 3 points. What a way to cap off one of the craziest weeks as a United fan in living memory. Welcome along to this week's Under the Abbey Stand review show. My name is Jules. As usual, I'm joined by a trusty panel of something approaching experts. Tom Walker, how are you doing, mate?
Miserable, to be fair. This week has taken its toll, should we say.
Really has. It's a really demoralising week, isn't it? I was thinking about it earlier. It's like everything's just been like kicking us down.
Yeah, we were obviously chatting afterwards with our acquaintances, and I just couldn't get like the overriding thought of, like, why is it always us?
Yeah. Always the bridesmaid and never the bride, eh? Yeah, I know. It's pretty low energy in here, to be fair. We're recording at 7 o'clock on a Sunday, and I think a few of us are still recovering from how we tried to recover from the defeat yesterday. Casper, how are you feeling?
It's only a game, isn't it? Nah, that's bollocks. That's bollocks, isn't it? Not good. To be honest, it's a bit of a funny thing. I know we'll get onto it. It's not so much that it was the derby that's the problem this time, is it? It's more like that's just like one element. It's like 5% of the problem is the fact it was a derby, I would say, which Tom might disagree with. I'm interested. More just the sequence of events this week. And then the sort of, I don't know, I guess he had that feeling going into the game. It was like maybe Barry Corr, you know, maybe everything that's happened this week is going to galvanize us and we're going to come flying out the traps. We're really going to put it on and we're going to win this derby game. And suddenly you're going to be like, Neil Harris, who the alternative now is something where you realistically, and I don't want to put us on a proper downward spiral, but you're really thinking like this time next week, will we still have no points under Barry Corr? And will we be actually flirting with, or dare I say, actually in the relegation zone and not quite sure what comes next? So, happy Monday.
Happy Monday, everyone. Hope you're having a good week.
I think after all this time, it's fair to say people aren't tuning in for positivity. Yeah. And if you are, welcome, because you're probably new.
Let's just start with some general views of the game, shall we? Tom, how are you viewing the game itself yesterday?
It is a bit of a difficult one to assess, to be fair, because, you know, obviously there's so much, like, so many different aspects going into it that kind of just put you on the back foot. You know, obviously Lyle Taylor's red card, I would actually suggest it's probably the biggest one of them, because I think, you know, the difference in performance between, let's say, yesterday and the Bolton game is pretty minimal, despite all the stuff that's happened with the manager. And then obviously the manager going does have an impact. And obviously it's a derby, so it's, you know, pressure's on as much as it can be, really. You've got in the back of your head what happened at London Road, so you're thinking that could happen again, potentially could. Or are we going to be galvanised and really get something out of it? And I just thought it was pretty flat, to be fair. Like, it's a bit strange. Like, I've seen kind of a couple of trains of thought of how people sort of viewed the game and viewed our performance. And, you know, I don't think it was as bad as the game at their place and the performance at their place, because it felt like for big parts of that match, we just phoned it in, basically. And I think there are occasions, you know, in years gone by where, you know, you can accuse Cambridge United Football Club's teams of just not caring and just not turning up and applying themselves. I wouldn't say that was entirely the case yesterday. But I would say that I think Posh wanted it more. And that doesn't have to be a case of that we didn't want it at all. It's just they were first to everything. And, you know, we talked in the week in the preview show, it's never a game we're going to win on quality because they're better players all over the park. And realistically, as much as we probably don't like to admit it, they've got a better manager in the dugout than we have at the moment. And probably, even if regardless what happened during the week hadn't happened. So you kind of accept that. But you have to make up for that by being first to everything and really wanting it more than they did. And, you know, if we feel that we applied ourselves, we should have applied ourselves more. And I don't think, you know, I don't think that's an unfair critique of the performance. And it kind of looked how it looked because of the restraints that we've got in terms of personnel. And, you know, I think what's happened with Neil Harris is actually kind of let Lyle Taylor off the hook big time, because he's kind of let us down, really. And you know, leaving us in a situation where you start either with Bon, who's like clearly well out of nick, or Kachunga, who we don't think is really like the number nine that you might need in a game like that to occupy defenders like Posh got available, like Ronnie Edwards, for example, who could have had his flip-flops on and feet up, to be frank. So yeah, for me, it was a really disappointing afternoon, really disappointing showing. Not a total surprise. I thought we looked pretty energetic for the first bit of the game without really troubling them at all. And obviously for the second half, it kind of had the same feel as it did London Road, really, you know, without the goals flying in, but it felt like we were kind of clinging on a little bit. And obviously one goal comes in, I guess, kind of fortunate circumstances in the way it actually goes in. But, you know, you can look to 3, 4, 5 different examples of where they maybe could and should have scored as well. So, a really disappointing showing. I think it caps off what has been arguably the club's most miserable week in its modern era, to be honest, probably since promotion back to the Football League. And probably maybe for a couple of years before that as well. It's been a truly difficult time to kind of just keep positive, really. And I have immense respect for anyone who can come out of Saturday with any positivity, really, because it just feels a bit depressing, a bit beaten, to be honest. But no complaints about how the game went, because I thought, you know, pretty obviously the better team won.
Yeah, I think that's pretty spot on, to be honest. And it's interesting that, like, the one thing that I think isn't in question or up for debate is, like, who deserved to win that football match. I suppose the frustration is, like, we probably didn't use the strengths or those intangible strengths that we needed to make more of a game of it, quite up to the level that we needed to. You mentioned, I think you summarised it pretty well, Tom, but you mentioned that, like, the fan base to me seems quite split and there's, like, two opposing views of the game. It maybe is a lot in, like, terms of, like, just how you approach football and your general positive approach to it or the opposite. Andy said that he saw two tweets come up on his Twitter timeline, one from this Tom Walker, who I think Tom's, you know, will have basically done a summary of what Tom's just said there, and another Tom Walker who basically flipped it around and thought that the effort and application was there and he was very proud of the team.
Just Casper, to be clear, I'm not saying it wasn't there at all. I'm saying it wasn't anywhere near as much.
No, I know.
And that, for me, is a problem.
I think what we've got here, right, is this: there's a sort of mad narrative that losing 5-0, getting absolutely thundered at their place, like, this was obviously better than that, but it's like that was like a 1 out of 10 or a 0 out of 10 that we did at theirs, and yesterday was probably like a 4 out of 10.
Yeah,
and people seem to think, like,
exactly
because it's better than the away game that it's fine, and that I think sort of to our Tom Walker's Twitter action after the game, which always
you gotta back me up here, Casper. I'm
going to decide what way.
Pan left, right, and centre. Need a bit of support from you, mate. If that's all right.
Well, I mean, I was going to back you up, mate. To be honest, I think you're probably a bit extreme in your views, as you sometimes are at 5 p.m. on a Saturday or 2 p.m. on a Saturday, I guess, as it was on this occasion. You make your point quite forcefully, I guess, but I sort of see where you're coming from, which is, like, if people think that's like, it's a home game in League One, right? We need, you know, Posh are bang out of form. They've lost 4 league games on the bounce. I know they're a good side. They're obviously better than us. Obviously got more resources. Like, the list goes on and on of the reasons why they should be beating us. But they were also, I thought Posh were right off it, if you know what I mean. We got a poor version of Peterborough, turned up at our place. I think we did start well. I think the first 20 minutes or so, the application was actually quite good. Like, when you've got Jack Lancaster steaming into tackles and stuff and put his body on the line, he's sort of, you know, I was reasonably impressed with how we started, but for whatever reason, we completely lost our way about halfway through our first half. Remember, I stood right next to Jules and we were like head in hands, like, we've completely lost control of this football match. Any you know, modicum of control that we had, we've completely given away. We seem to, Peterborough pushed us quite high and we seemed completely unable to deal with it, or to be honest, to have the bravery to try and play out short. Quite a lot of players, I mean, we'll get onto like departmental and player by player, I'm sure, at some point, but centre midfield as a department was completely lacking in for about 70 minutes that game yesterday. And I think that's where the game was won and lost, really. You know, loads of stuff to point out. It was just a bit of a shame that we lost our way, because I actually think the effort and the application was good, particularly in the first half. I think their goal obviously takes completely takes all the air out of us. And then suddenly, as you say, I guess the main disappointment for me is that we didn't really at any point in that second half show even a moment that wasn't even a 5-minute spell or a 3-minute spell where you're thinking, oh, hang about, like, maybe we could do something here. And to be honest, what that led to, as you said, was pretty flat feeling. Nothing like getting absolutely gubbed at their place, though. Like, so I can sort of understand where this viewpoint is coming from, to be fair to the younger, taller, more attractive Tom Walker that is not on this pod. you know, I can see why people would say, look, the application was decent, but before everything was just okay, wasn't it? Nothing was great. Nothing was totally abysmal like it was at their place. So it was certainly an improvement on what we did at their place, but they've done us 6-0 this season. Yeah. They are our main rivals. We need the points, man. Forget the derby. Forget those Peterborough for a second. We just need more points on this table, right?
But I think a lot of the frustration, right, is that we lost 1-0, but this was a real opportunity where we had the chance to play the game on a different set of qualities to any other normal game, which is why like using that derby game I think was an important thing, and a frustration of not playing the game the way that I think we could have done on those intangibles.
Just to quickly build on that as well, and like this might be like a bit of a weird comparison, and tell me if it is, and it's a bit mad, but I think there's certain kind of similarities you can draw from it. Like we're obviously recording this on Sunday evening. I've just watched the Carabao Cup final, and like if you look at the situation going into that game, it probably mirrors a little bit of what we are going into the Posh game, that you know, playing against a team who have a lot more resources, better players available to you on the day, and you know that going into it, and obviously you know at the end of it, Liverpool are bringing on children, they're hamstrung, they're missing their best players, but for a bit of grit, like showing more desire to go out and win a football match than probably in terms of pure quality alone a better team on the day, they come away with a good result, and it just didn't feel like we had much of that. And I think the point that Castle makes about not even having just a period in the game where you put them under, like we're not talking like a horrendous team of footballers here that we've got. Like some of them have played at higher levels a lot, and some of them have played even in the Premier League, but like there has to be enough there surely to show a bit more than what we did. And that's kind of where the frustration is, I think, for me.
Yeah, I'm fully with you. Look, let's start going through some of the events and some of the areas of the team. So lineups come out. Kachunga starts up top instead of Bond, which I think everyone was expecting Bond to be a straight swap in for Taylor. Liam asks, how did it feel to play without a recognised striker, and how do we pose more of a threat to Stevenage? Casper, I suppose another question I wanted to add to this is like, and it's another frustration, I think, which is much less of a sort of emotional one, but much more of a football sort of tactical one, is like, it didn't strike me that there was much of a game plan here. Because like you say, that the centre midfield area goes missing, especially Thomas, to try and link things up. You've got no aerial ability up top, yet we're constantly pumping balls up towards the centre halves. It just didn't feel like a game plan that had been thought out too thoroughly.
Well, Liam obviously knows I don't have my badges, because I know that he listens to UTAS a lot. So how do we pose more of a threat against Stevenage without going completely David L? I don't know the obvious answer to that. Like, yeah, I think it probably was a bit of a surprise to see that lineup. I don't know what that really says for Macaulay Bond, to be honest, at the moment. It's obviously not a ringing endorsement. But I know that the three of us walking to the ground actually felt reasonably positive about the lineup, and felt like if we were going to sort of shape up, I guess similarly as to how we did at Oxford away, and have a lot of sort of movement, mobility, little overlaps, you know, sort of little triangle balls, just all the sort of basics, then actually it could be quite effective. And it might certainly be not what Peterborough necessarily prepared for or expected. So we were reasonably pleased that we also had a good feeling, I think, before the game, that if Macaulay Bond's going to make an impact, give him, you know, 20, 30 minutes at the end of the game to come on fresh at what should be a hopefully slightly tiring Peterborough team. Albeit it's not that tiring if you're just rolling the ball around in your own half, to be honest. But, you know, the logic there was like, can he make an impact off the bench? Like, is that going to be actually the best use of him? A bit like if you think back to the start of the season, obviously how we were using maybe Fajiri wasn't getting too many starts, but was coming on and doing really well. Feels like a lifetime ago now, to be honest.
All about Fajiri, to be honest, mate. It's been so long.
Well, our two top goal scorers are still Ahabme and Fajiri, so you know, show some respect. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. Like, was there a game plan? I guess there was. There will be. We can't do Barry Cord dirty, I guess, and Betsy. They must have had a thought process and a plan, but I don't know that we had a plan B for sure, because as soon as Peterborough figured out this like false nine, lack of recognized striker, they started pushing us so high. For whatever reason, we felt like we couldn't play the ball out short, and that was it for me. The whole game plan at that point has kind of gone, and it didn't feel like we had an obvious next plan. And to be honest, it's really unusual for us. I mean, we had no height at all, really. Like, I think Kachunga did all right to win what he did win. And then when Bon came on, he won a few bits as well. But genuinely, we were taking goal kicks in the second half of the first half, like last 20 minutes of the first half. Stephen's going long, and I'm like, I'm not sure who he's like. The only thing I could think was like, you've got to like push Danny Andrew forward because he's probably like, and I think he's like 5'8". He's like your most like combative, likely to win a header. Or who else are you trying to hit? Like, so it's just a real, it was a mess, to be honest. And the lack of trying something different, I thought, was a little bit surprising. So we did seem to just repeat that pattern for about an hour of the game. It just meant that the ball kept coming back at us. I think that's kind of what led to Peter having those maybe three or four like very presentable chances in the first half. And to be honest, we were left the feeling, and this feels a bit harsh now on a Sunday when you compare to what you say straight after the game. But my feeling leaving the ground was like, actually the performance was pretty similar to the one up at their place. We just didn't concede a load of goals. Like we could easily in that first half have suddenly gone 3-0 down in the last 15 minutes and a half, and we'd have been staring down the barrel of something very similar to what happened.
Yeah, it's not inconceivable to say that in another world, that first half goes very differently, right? And you can see two or three, and then you're sat here looking, like you say, another result or scoreline like that. Tom, first half then, obviously, we did have a few openings of our own. There's a few really lovely ball in from Andrew. Kaikai had a decent opening, which he pulled across the box to no one. Did it feel like two sort of sides to this question? A, building on what Casper said, do you think we rode our luck to get in goalless at half time? And secondly, my reflection is that when we played at our best is when we actually pressed at our highest. But it sort of felt like we didn't do that for the whole half. It just felt like there was a sort of 10-minute spell where we really, really applied that pressure.
I actually thought it felt a little bit differently, to be honest, at the start of the game. And it's something that Kaur kind of mentioned in his post-match. I thought, like, it looks good because it's a derby game to be, like, kind of flying into tackles and sort of pressing up as high as you possibly can do. But I think a team like Peterborough, like, they can just play around that. Like, if you press them really high when the centre-backs have got the ball, they just knock it around you. And it was pretty noticeable, I think, that after about 10 or 15 minutes, we drop back a little bit, and rather than pressing like the centre backs having the ball or the full backs or whoever it might have been, that sort of first line, if you like, or the back line, I guess it is. We were kind of pressing after they made the first pass, which I think actually was probably a more intelligent thing to do in terms of actually like keeping the score level. Obviously, it limits the amount that you can win it back high, and that, to be honest, felt like where we were going to get more success from, I guess. But yeah, like, we're talking about sort of half moments, aren't we? We're not talking about like really like clear cut opportunities. And I think like, if you look at the first half as it was, Posh hit the bar. They had a really good chance at the back post. I think it was Poku should have scored. And I think if you give him that opportunity another 100 times, he probably scores 99 of them. And you know, from our side, we obviously have the disallowed goal for Kachunga, which is, you know, obviously he's in an offside position, so it's absolutely just. But that aside, I don't really think there was too much. You know, you mentioned about the shot that Lancaster had, but look,
there is a blatant pen in the first couple of minutes, but he's also miles offside, so it's hardly worth talking about.
Yeah, it's just I just felt it was one of those afternoons where like there was a little bit of huff and puff, but like there was no invention to what we're doing. Don't really think we showed any quality. And look, this is probably where what happened, you know, as much as having or not having Lyle Taylor available is obviously, I guess, the really noticeable thing, because, you know, it's personnel. You feel like if you had a presence there, then naturally you're going to be more threatening. But I actually think that probably this is where the managerial stuff has really come back to bite us a little bit, because I can't sit here and blame Barry Corr for like not having more of a plan, more of an idea about how to do this, and obviously exactly what he was going to do to actually get into it. You imagine there had been some discussions about it maybe before the Bolton game with Harris, so there might have been something talked about how we can kind of get at Posh. But realistically, he's had, what, probably two and a half days to prepare for this, having previously had absolutely no inkling that this would be a situation that he was in. And that's where it's really hurt us, I think. So, yeah. Not really enough to kind of get excited about for me in that first half, but I felt like, exactly like Casper said, like, it doesn't take too many mental gymnastics to kind of see a situation where on another day they maybe do score a couple of goals, and it's quite difficult for me to think that we actually really threatened enough to kind of have taken anything.
Then after that, Caspel, goal goes in, start the second half. Who are we blaming there? Stevens?
Horrible timing, mate. I think you know what I'm going to say probably anyway, because I always say it, but you can't almost always blame one person individually for any like goal that's conceded, right? So they've still let the players get a shot away from the edge of the box, if you know what I mean, without massive pressure, which is a problem anyway. But yeah, for sure, it's just one of those situations, I guess, where Stevens is anticipating the ball's going to come to his right and starts to step across. And as soon as you put your weight over to get back over, is really difficult. I think, like, it's a bit of a weird goal. Obviously, it's a bit unfortunate the way it's gone in. I mean, you can say certainly they deserve to be 1-0 up at that point anyway. Yeah, obviously, I mean, Stevens, yes, but it's one of those where I think if you're like a proper top level keeper or going to the Championship, then yes, you're thinking you should be saving it. I don't know at League One really, because it's just gone in, like nicked in off the post, right? So yeah, he's got his weight a bit wrong, but I don't think it's fair to just say it's like entirely his fault. It's a bit of a weird goal, isn't it?
It is a bit of a weird goal, and it's, again, it's a frustrating one to, you know, we've all agreed that we deserve to lose that game, but to, for it to be that goal is like, it's like the first Bolton goal on Tuesday. It's like, almost make them work harder for it. Don't let them score in the end, quite simple, sort of clumsy goals. But look, anyway, that's sort of irrelevant. I've been looking forward to talking about this next thing since it happened, because we all, and not just us three, other people who weren't watching the game with when we caught up with them after, all noticed this.
We should have got Walker to voice note this yesterday. I think this would have gone over better at like 2 p.m. Walking to the pub after the game.
Walking to the pub probably quicker than Jordan Cousins was walking off the pitch when he got subbed. We've got to talk about this, Tom. I mean, it was, my memory of it is, it's on about the 65th minute. It's about 25 minutes to go. Cousins comes off. You're 1-0 down in the game. Forget the derby. You're 1-0 down in the game at home, chasing the game, and he's walking off the pitch.
Really slowly. Really slowly.
Slowly. Like, honestly, like, posh players are basically like pushing him off the pitch to get on with the game. Tom, like, do you think it's indicative of some of the attitude in this team for some of the, you know, the leaders?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I don't know necessarily how useful it is to kind of just look at a moment like that and extrapolate it into like a bigger thing. But like, also, like, it is one of those things that you just think as like a football fan, like, that these are the sort of things that really grate a little bit more. And I'm just like, mate, fucking run. Like, you've barely run since the start of the game. Like, at least run now to give someone else an opportunity to do the job that you couldn't do. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's incredible how the narrative in football swings, right? Because it was only, 10 days ago or so that there was debates about him being our player of the season. I saw a guy run on X. One of some... let's not get into it, but he's been well off it. And I think the wider point that you could make from it, and, you know, without just pinning everything on Jordan Cousins, it's obviously not all his fault, despite the fact he has been appalling for weeks now. It's just the midfield, isn't it? Like, it's an area of the pitch that we're just really, really not just struggling with. Like, it just looks horrendous at the moment. It's so slow. It's so pedestrian. There's no creation. There's nothing coming from the midfield. That starts with a guy like Cousins, but Thomas has been well off it. Digby's looked very short of quality when he's played. I think Lancaster just ahead of him did better against Posh, and that showed a few moments. Probably the only one really, I think, who looked like he was intending to take the game by the scruff of the neck a little bit. And then, you know, you look at the other parts of the midfield. I mean, Brophy, we've sat and defended him week after week, but the guy just doesn't deliver, unfortunately, as far as I can see anyway. Maybe there's something really blatant and obvious that I'm missing, but you know, he's a bit of a flannel of a footballer at the moment, to be honest with you. But I mean, look, the question is obviously about how much are kind of key players, you know, kind of contributing. Are they doing what we expect? Well, I guess if you look through the team yesterday, you look at Morrison, who I think did play well, and I think has been probably the big player that has delivered more often than others. But if you're looking at the others, it's Ryan Bennett and Jordan Cousins. They both get hooked, and I think that tells a story as much as anything. And you know, I don't know what it is with these guys, because you know they've played at higher levels, and they've played for high levels for long parts of their careers, which suggests to me that there is the quality there, because otherwise I don't think you rack up like 200 appearances in the Championship. Bennett's playing the Premier League. Like, I don't think in a sport as competitive and as fiercely competed as football is, I don't think you can do that without having the right quality. I don't think it's a sort of thing where like you can just kind of get away with it for a bit at that level. So it must be in there somewhere, but they're just not showing it. Now, that might be the setup, it might be something you know, external, I don't know, but to me it just looks like a lack of application. And you know, it's not something that you can necessarily extrapolate to the wider team, but it's also just like have an understanding of your role within the team. And you know, obviously, you know, him walking off the pitch is a really small moment, but it does feel a little bit indicative. And I'm sure there'll be people out there who maybe don't agree with that, but it's like it's a 77th minute, right? So time is very fast running out. Get off the fucking pitch, just like run, do some running for once. It was a really frustrating moment. And interestingly, we obviously weren't stood right together at the game, sort of met towards the end, and it was the first thing that we both said to each other.
Yeah.
And I think in games like this, it's always little things that you pick up on. Like, you know, in the away game, we were talking about the lack of bookings, for example, and felt that was a really poor reflection on our performance. And that's just another one of those moments that I think it might not be the most rational thing to do, but you do extrapolate out and start drawing conclusions about other things from it, just because, you know, we're football fans and that's what we do.
Yeah, and I think, to be honest, like, we had a question from Joe on these sort of some more experienced players in the squads. He said, should we be expecting more from them? We're getting patchy and inconsistent performances. The effort's there for parts of the games at least, but even with experienced players in the squad, we've got such limited quality. The basics of our play are so poorly executed so often. We're leaky at the back, blunt up top, easily dominated in midfield. Obviously, he's gone on to make a few other points there, Caspel, but sort of building off what Tom said on a more general sense, do you think this is something that is maybe our biggest issue, aside from something we said on the preview show, was for Saturday, the leaders of this team, the players, are going to be really important with everything that's happened with the manager this week. And maybe what we saw yesterday and everything we said at the start of the show comes down to some of these more experienced, higher paid, higher pedigree players, either A, not playing up to the quality exactly as Tom just said, or B, maybe just not putting in the application or ambition to want to play for Cambridge United in the way they need to.
Yeah, I just think they're not hitting their levels, right? Pretty much across the board. Like, maybe Michael Morrison, you say, has been fine, which is fair. But a lot of these other experienced players, you know, Championship experience, some Premiership experience, you just would expect a bit more. I mean, there's also a thing where I know we're saying, obviously, this year we've got a higher average age squad than we've had for a very, very long time. But they're not that old. Like, most of them aren't, really. I think Ryan Bennett's like 33. Cousins is like in his early 30s. Like, these guys are not, they're not like late 30s, like proper twilight of career stage. To some of these guys, genuinely, if you're a centre-back and you're 33 years old, you could have another 5 years of like Football League, you know, under your belt, basically, definitely. So I can't really put my finger on exactly what it is. I mean, I think more back to Joe's point around why are we inconsistent, why are the performances patchy, why are we so, you know, generally seems quite down on it, why are we so poor? I think it's easy maybe to forget that, including Peterborough, but many of these other teams are playing in League One, have got like multi-million pounds more than us to spend every single year. So even though, yes, we've done well to assemble sort of reasonably experienced squad with some good like League One, Championship, and even a bit of Premiership experience, these other teams have just got better players than us, right? Like Peterborough, you match up the two 11s player for player, and to be honest, you've probably taken all 11 of theirs. There's a strong chance that you would, to be honest. So it's like,
they bring in Johnson, Clark, Harrison. It's like, sometimes you play teams like this at 11, yeah. It's like, oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the top 12 teams in League One are kind of like that generally, really. I think realistically, look, if you think our ambition generally is probably to get in a given season anywhere between 60 and 70 points, probably like a really good total for a Cambridge United team at this point in history to be getting in League One in any season, then sure, we're going to be inconsistent, right? We're going to lose some home games. Like, you know, we saw from Neil Harris's tenure, obviously, I think he was getting 1.4 points a game. That is enough to get you 69 points a season. That would be like a really, really good return. And that means you're going to be inconsistent. Like 1.5 points a game means you're going to lose three in a row at some point, and then you've got to win one or two and get a few draws. So I sort of get it. We've seen this point on the message board recently. I think someone was suggesting that if we stayed in League One another two or three years and finished like 12th, 14th, 15th, that people would be starting to get restless and complaining about it. But I'm not really sure that's fair or true. And I think going all the way back to Tom's point earlier about trying to find some positives, if you think about it at the moment, almost the entirety of the problems that we have at the moment for Cambridge United are just football related, like managers, players, staff, whatever, all very football related. Certainly we've had worse times in my time watching United, where football's been like the last thing you've been worried about. You've been worried, like, will you have a club to go and watch at all? Will you have a stadium to go to? Like, my feeling here with this, if we can just sit in League One for the next 2-3 years, we suddenly see this new Market Road and new Havant coming up around us, and we're getting average crowds over 10,000, or, you know, up towards 10,000, then we're making massive strides, right? So, yes, it feels shit after Peterborough at home or Peterborough away. But if we stay in League One this year and we manage to do it again next year, then all this amazing stuff is going on at the club around it. So it's nice. It sounds a bit daft, but it's nice to just be worried about football. The football side of things is the thing that we're worried about, and not like all this other stuff we've had to worry about over the last 20 years.
This is true. You're absolutely right. But I will say that I think what the last week has probably instilled in us a bit is like that is becoming a bigger if by the week. And I suppose this point about leaders is you look at the fixtures we've got coming up, we still need points. And I'm not saying that we're going to finish the season on 38 points. Obviously, that would be a pretty mental thing to say. But I think what we've just seen now that is, I mean, granted a very small sample size under Barry Corbett, but three managers with the same players and the same habits in certain games repeating themselves. I just think we need to look at like what has been the constant throughout that. And it's some of these, I think it's some of these experienced sort of older players who are eating up the bigger part of the wage budget and maybe not delivering. Tom, end of the game was quite disappointed, really. The second half when we're chasing a goal, this is, I think, something that's repeated itself, not just in yesterday's game, and not even frustrated at it because it's a derby or anything like that. But it just feels like when we've got like you're chasing a goal with like 15, 20 minutes left, just doesn't feel like we like proper put it on teams. It doesn't feel like we proper like wave after wave of attack, like set piece, set piece, set piece. Not even like loads of big chances created, just like camping out in their box. And like, do you know what I mean? I don't know if it's something that's a bit of a sort of football your dad sort of point, right? Like, but it just doesn't feel like we bang on the door enough in some of these games to actually to get something from them.
No, not at all. You know, the last sort of 20-25 minutes, like I just feel like I've watched that like thousands of times.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know, like I'm sure like fans of other clubs have the same thing, and I'm sure like you know, there's plenty of examples where we have got back into games and you know they don't necessarily come immediately to mind, but there obviously will be some. But particularly of late, like it just feels like the amount of times I've watched a ball kicked long from a centre back or a full back and headed away really comfortably by the opposition centre back or full back with no challenge, I just like lose count. I'm just like, I'm sure when we're a goal up away from home or even at home, like I'm sure I'm more nervous than the opposition fans are when the roles are reversed.
100%.
And obviously part of that is, you know, our ambitions in this league are obviously pretty limited, and it's all the reasons that we've discussed loads of times. But even so, like they're sitting off pretty naturally. I think the thing that underpins all of our frustration, I don't really think Posh were like markedly like the better team on the day. I don't think they turned up and put in a really, really good performance to beat us. It just felt like particularly the last bit of the game, it's just like we've not really like made them work for it, I think. And like, if I look at the subs that were made, like I'd be looking at like Njoku to come on like 20 minutes earlier. Like it feels exactly. Like off the bench, like he's probably the one who's going to like cause problems, you know, a bit different, even if it's just through like the kind of fearlessness that you get from a younger player who's obviously only made a few appearances, you know, a player of that sort of profile. Like, just get him on, give him something else to think about. But it just felt like it was the same sort of approach that we've tried hundreds and it feels like thousands of times over the years on the different managers with different players in different divisions. But I mean, you know, it was flat yesterday. I think it's the point that Caswell makes that kind of probably sums up a lot of my frustrations, which it just felt like we never really had a period in the game. And, you know, when you're at home in a derby, you need to have that. And if you don't have that, then, you know, the game obviously goes how it does. And it's intensely frustrating to watch. I think the big problem and the easy fix is going to come against Northampton when Lyle Taylor's back. So it feels like until then, we're always going to be kind of clutching at straws a little bit with regards to what we can do going forward. And, you know, we can talk about how we set up for games and obviously what the lineup should be and who should play centrally and who should play out wide and stuff like this and how many people should we have in those forward areas. But to be honest with you, like, I just look for a bit more, like, and again, I'm not trying to say that, like, they're not trying, they're not running hard, but run harder, like, you know, because you need to in these sorts of games, you need to do more. And that's not to say that they don't do anything and they're not working hard at all, they don't want it at all, but want it more. Like, it's kind of like an intangible thing, and I can't really articulate it that well, to be honest, but hopefully you kind of get the perspective, the sort of thing that I'm trying to say, which is like, yeah, just feel like last stage of the game, there's just got to be a bit more emphasis, a bit more desire to get something out of it. And if you feel it's there, you're going to have to find even more, because Posh are obviously a good team, and to challenge them in any game is difficult, but particularly with the restraints we've got at the moment, even more so.
I do definitely see where you're coming from, and I completely agree, actually. And it feels like we're not talking about this one game, we're talking about a trend that we're seeing over a lot of games when we don't seem to be doing this when we're chasing a goal. And I just think about the amount of times I've stood in away ends and watched the home team, whoever it is, like, pile it on us towards the end of the game.
Like Oxford away.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Good example.
Mate. Exactly what I was going to say. The last 10 minutes of that, and, like, granted, that's also them being a good side and us being leggy, and there's obviously always reasons for it, but it just feels like it's never us, right? You're just always seeing the home side, like, just wave after wave after pile and piling on attacks. Let's also just quickly touch on that subs thing, Caswell, because we stood next to each other, and I think we were looking for the subs a good 10 minutes earlier. I mean, what were we saying yesterday? Is there some sort of, like, vortex in the
home? It's got, like, gravitational pull.
Yeah.
Our last few managers love stripping these players off and then just making them stand there. And you're like, I wanted him on, like, 10 minutes ago anyway. And he's like, what are you waiting for? I think
the thing that, like, managers do? Like, because it feels like, yeah, Cause done it a couple of times. Well, definitely this time. Obviously, Bonner, you know, was kind of infamous for doing it towards the end of his reign. And even we spoke about it during Neil Harris's short tenure. Like, it feels like we just make subs really late. Something that, like, other managers do?
They're following data. Like, you know, they're following some piece of data that's turned up at, like, St. George's Park. It's definitely, like, it stinks of coaching manual. Like, there's a certain don't sub a player on if you win a throw in your own half, because, like, statistically you have 10% more likely to concede a goal or some bollocks like that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's nerds just ruining football, mate. That's the problem.
Yeah, it's fucking scientists getting involved.
All the beards, like, mate. Just, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Just get him on, though. Like, do you know what I mean? With Bon yesterday and Njoku, it was so clear on probably about 60 minutes that we've completely, like, lost our way. We are having no impact on this football match now. There's almost no one at that point you could justify and say, yeah, they don't deserve to get subbed off. You could sub anyone off here. I mean, Kaikai, we watched it. Like, he's been brilliant the last few weeks, Kaikai, right? So he's totally clear. Like, Upper Carlisle deservedly was the highest rated player in League One after that Carlisle performance and Team of the Week and all of that. But he just looked so tired yesterday, didn't he? Like, do you remember in the first half, we were like, wow, it's like, and he was getting caught in between, like, he was either too high, too deep, like, just never seemed to have the gas to be in the right place. And obviously had that chance the first half where he could square the ball, but he could have just kept running into the box, but he just squared it. It was like, oh, what's going on? But
it,
like,
such a tired cross as well. Do you remember it was like low, yeah, like, first man, like, there was nothing in it.
Yeah, but, like, not singling anyone out, but it's just like, it felt like we could have made, like, there's a whole stack of changes we could have made at that point. it's just frustrating to see it go as long as it did. And I guess the issue is the later you bring someone, the less of an opportunity they've got to actually influence the game, right? And it just felt like we needed a change probably a little bit earlier. And then once he'd stripped him off, like, definitely do it. And my feeling is he probably would just get Njoku on at the same time as well, give him more than 4 or 5 minutes, which is what he got.
Yeah, in summary, it feels like a lot of what we're talking about from a football perspective for yesterday. And I guess, again, something that isn't the first time we've seen it is just like a proactivity in every sense of the word, like both from the players on the pitch and the manager making subs and the way we approach these games. So yeah, look, last question on yesterday, Tom. Simon and James have both asked about the atmosphere. James asks, why do you think the Abbey is lacking in atmosphere so much despite being full today and average attendances at a 20 plus year high? It was a point that was made after the Bolton game as well, which actually I wasn't at, but apparently it was just completely dead. Wonder if you had any thoughts on that.
Well, part of it is in the results and part of it is in the performances, you know. It's a kind of age old discussion of like, do fans drive on the team or does the team drive on the fans to create a good atmosphere? And, you know, realistically, there's not a right or wrong answer to that. It just depends on where you sit on it. I'm kind of more towards the idea that fans will create an incredible atmosphere if they're seeing something from the pitch that is exciting them to some extent. And let's be frank, we didn't have that at any point in the game on Saturday. So that maybe explains that one. You know, I guess you could argue that the acoustics of the NRE aren't great anyway. I remember a game a couple of years ago. We sat in the main stand towards the end, towards the sort of south stand bit of the main stand, and like couldn't hear the NRE like at all. But like, you know, there's people in there making noise. And I thought for the first bit of the game it was all right. And to be honest, the atmosphere just followed. From my perspective, how you would expect it to go, right? It's good while it's a bit feisty and while it's really kind of hanging in the balance, and they go ahead and naturally everyone's a bit down. And I think, frankly, after the week that we've had as a football club, look, you can kind of forgive the atmosphere just being a bit beaten by the end, to be honest, because we're not seeing what we want to see on the pitch. The result wasn't very good. Everyone's, you know, gone from within a week looking at the top half to looking at over our shoulder a little bit more. And frankly, we just needed a little bit of something to lift us, I think. And that probably is going to be a new manager coming in at some point, and that feels like what we desperately need now. But yeah, look, you know, I think the atmospheres earlier on in the season were absolutely brilliant, and you know, we commented a lot of times on, you know, how enjoyable it was being at the Abbey, and particularly, you know, the NRE. I remember like the Reading game, for example, a lot of people were commenting on that as being one of the best atmospheres they've seen at the Abbey. So it's not been like horrendous all season, but I do think of late, like, you know, it's probably just the thing. Like, you're right in the thick of the season, and people maybe just a little bit battle weary at this point, and particularly what's happened, having happened. Yeah, I can kind of understand it.
We're all reeling, a bit demoralised. Look, before we do a bit of next manager chat, let's go from one borough to another. Chat about Stevenage. Let's get a preview first with League One's most positive fan, Matt from the Stevenage FC podcast.
Right, I'm joined by Matt from the Stevenage FC podcast. Obviously, we'll try again. Stevenage away coming up on Tuesday. Didn't quite go to plan last time for obvious reasons, but you know, we'll have another crack at it this time. I remember we were speaking to you early in the season, Matt. You were very positive on Stevenage's start to the season for obvious reasons. Currently seventh in the league, you know, obviously just a point behind Oxford in sixth in the playoffs, having played a couple of games less. So still a really good opportunity. I'm guessing you're probably still pretty happy with how things have gone since we last met.
Yeah, right over the moon, buddy. And first of all, again, thanks for having me back on. No, I did really enjoy coming on the start of the season. It was quite weird, actually, because then I remember kind of pinching myself being in League One. And I'm going to be honest, it hasn't changed. I'm still pinching myself now, even though we've got, like, you know, 30 games left. But yeah, what an incredible season for us. You know, we came into League One and, you know, we just wanted to just do well, really, just stay up in the division. And I think for a lot of us, there was potential to do well with who we recruited. But yeah, ultimately, we just wanted to stay up, have a good season, and then build for the future. But, you know, with the manager we've got, with the players we've got, they want to be up there competing. And we're currently seventh, you know, a point off the playoffs and 13 to play. It's just unbelievable. And it's starting to settle in now. I think we're all kind of sitting around going, oh my God, we could, you know, get in there, which would be incredible. But no, since we last played you, it's been a unbelievable season. 16 wins, you know, and a lot of those wins, fantastic performances. We've built this team. Every player's a starting player. And we've got momentum, and with the manager, you just never know. And yeah, but it's been a truly magnificent season, seeing this team play at some big grounds and big stadiums, and doing great as well. So yeah, it's been terrific.
Yeah, the manager, Steve Evans, someone we've come up against a lot over the years, has always been a difficult opponent for us. I'm guessing it's probably the same for a lot of the teams you've come up against, really. But, I mean, what do you put it down to? Well, obviously, it's been a season maybe better than a lot of people from the outside would have expected as well. So what would you say is the main reasons behind that?
Well, I think when we come into the league, it was, you know, and I think I said this on the last podcast that I came on from, when we come into League One, it was, you know, do we keep that promotion side, as great as they were, do we keep all of them and have a crap with them in League One and probably not doing the things we're doing now, but still be competitive? But knowing the manager, you know, he's a winner, and he would have come into this season, he wanted to win the league, and that's what he's like. So we recruited a team to be able to allow us to do the things we're doing. We recruited loads of players that have been competing in the playoffs over the last couple of years. All the Thompsons, Dan Butler, Nick Freeman, you know, these are players that have, you know, either been promoted out of this division or have competed for it. And that's been the reason with the original style that we had. And we've kept that style, by the way. It's exactly the same as what it is last year. But obviously better players playing that style means evidently we're getting a better kind of mould of that style. And that's it in a nutshell. You know, he's built a camaraderie around the team where, you know, he doesn't want any reserves. It's, you know, every player is a starting player. It doesn't matter if you're on the bench or you're not playing a lot. When you play, you know, you should win. And if you don't, and if you don't perform well, you're not playing to the right level. And, you know, with all of those things and Steve knowing how to win football matches, because that's what makes him so great. You know, that's kind of been the recipe to our success. But, yeah, look, Steve's done an unbelievable job. And actually, I was saying to a few of our chaps earlier on the podcast, we can't believe that he's done 88 games for us in league matches, and he's won 44 of them. So from the 88, he's won half the game. So, yeah, look, he's done an incredible job. And, you know, to see that he's got us up in the League One playoff races is unbelievable.
Yeah, for sure. And an incredible record. And, you know, regardless of what other people might think, you know, you can't deny he's a good operator at this level and probably the one below as well. But I mean, for anyone that maybe hasn't seen much of Stevenage this year and didn't witness the game at the Abbey, how would you describe the setup? What do you kind of expect it to look like?
Yeah, well, our style is kind of what it is, really, as you see it, it's what you get. It's direct. We like to get the ball forward early. And then when we get the ball forward early, we play in those kind of areas with the Jordan Roberts and the Jake Forster Caskies. And we like to bombard your box. We're very strong from set pieces. And, you know, we've got a real fitness in the group as well. We play into the very last minute of the game. So, you know, that's our style. That's what you'll see Tuesday. And it was similar to kind of how we played at your place, really. And we've been, well known this season, and not just this season, last year, but with this team this season, for scoring goals in the last 10 minutes. So, yeah, that's our style in a nutshell. We like to kind of shape up in a couple of different formations. We can go a 3-5-2, which is what we played at your place back in August. But recently, kind of Steve's gone for this kind of 4-4-2 with a diamond and a four at the back, which seems to work as well for us and kind of accommodates our midfield much better because we've got a lot of starting players in that middle. So that's our style. That's the way that we'll set up. Yeah, a lot of people say it's not the most attractive, but gets results. That's the main thing.
Yeah, can't argue with any of that. You mentioned a few people sort of throughout your answer so far. So I guess in terms of key players, who would you say are the ones to watch?
Oh, good question. Well, Jamie Reid has to be, you know, one of the main ones. Although I know that he didn't play Saturday, had a little bit of a knock, but I'm hearing he's back for Tuesday. What a guy, what a player. He scored the winner in the away game at your place. He's joint top goal scorer in League One. What a season he's having. And in my opinion, he's a club legend. But, you know, he's got his own nickname, Big Goal Reedy, because he always scores the big goals in the big moments in the big games. And he's just having a phenomenal season. And when we first got Reedy, it was, you know, he was kind of in limbo in his career, really. We didn't really know where he was going. We thought he was going to go back to the National League. If someone would have said to us 2 years ago that he'd be doing the things now in League One, we would have kind of never have believed you. So, Jamie Reid, unbelievable player, having an incredible season in League One. Other players, Cole Piergiani, captain. Again, a lot of people are saying it's another player of the season shout for us, and I'd agree. You know, just such a kind of a masterclass at the back. You know, wins his battles, wins his headers, good footballer as well. Dangerous in the other team's box. He's having a truly magnificent season. And again, another magnificent story with Pidge, with him getting relegated and then coming to us, getting promoted, being in League One and having the season he's having. Just such a vital player for us and captain. And again, legend of the club. And I'd say if there was a couple of others, I'd say Jordan Roberts is a big player for us. Again, I think Jordan scored in the away game, having a brilliant season in League One. You know, he's kind of showing us all the talent that we first thought that Jordan had when he first joined the club. And I would really say those were probably the standouts. There's some others in there as well, but I'd probably say those three are probably the leading three players in this season in League One.
Yeah, for sure. I've got to ask you for a few predictions here, really. I guess starting with the season more generally, I'm guessing probably the top two is a little bit out of sight, you know, given there's already a big gap there. So it'll be the top six. Do you think you can, or do you think you will do it?
It's unbelievable to say it, by the way. I can't stop smiling, but yeah, I really do. I just think, and I said this the other day, and lad that I do the podcast with, Andy, he said a couple of weeks ago that he doesn't think we'll do it, but I do. I just think, you know, we're 1 point off. We've got the game in hand. We've just got over that blip, got a big win Saturday against Wickham, which was vital. It means obviously the game against yourself and 2 months to go. We're in the driving seat. The manager that we've got knows how to get over the dotted line. The players we've got, especially the new boys, know how to make the playoffs in this league. And even the original lads know how to get over the dotted line when, you know, you're going for promotion or whatnot. And I just think we'll make it. And I mean, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it now because, you know, I never thought we'd do it. But yeah, I think we'll get in. I look at the top six and I think Oxford will drop out. Not so sure about Oxford at the minute. They're having a real tough time the last couple of months. I think we'll be in there. I think Oxford will miss out. I think Blackpool will miss out. And I think we'll either go sixth or fifth, one of the two. But yeah, I do. I think we'll make the playoffs.
Cool, and then moving on to Tuesday, I guess the first prediction I've got to ask you for is how likely is the game to go ahead? Because we had some troubles last time, didn't we?
Oh, God, don't remind me. Do you know what's crazy as well? I remember sitting there in the north and it went off. And I just thought, oh, I'll come back on in 10 minutes. But then 10 minutes came 30. And I remember turning around going, this ain't going to be on, this is, because, you know, the players are going to have to come out again. Warm up again. The game's going to get delayed by 50 minutes. It's a night game. I know it's local for both, but it was just the most craziest thing in the world. And what not a lot of people know is about a month before that, we played Peterborough at home and the same thing happened, but then it was recovered 10 minutes later. So actually it was a reoccurring thing. And when that happened, it was like, oh my God, it's happened again. But, yeah, fingers crossed, eh? Fingers crossed. The UK Power Network aren't called on a Tuesday night.
Yeah, for sure. Well, for any Cambridge fans listening that are making the journey, make sure we've got a few quid for the meter just in case there's any repeated problems. And then finally, score prediction for Tuesday. You know, obviously we come into it a little bit disjointed, shall we say. And from your perspective, I'm guessing you probably see it one or two ways, either a real opportunity or maybe a bit of a banana skin. How do you see it going?
Yeah, look, great opportunity for us. I think, you know, after the blip that we had where we picked up 1 point in 12, you know, we looked at Wickham and thought, you know, get back to winning ways. We won that Saturday. Really solid performance as well. Could have won it by a couple more. And I think we look at this game as a winnable game. You know, these two games, I think, for us are kind of a catalyst to get winning again. And then we've got 2 months to go to see if we can make the League One playoff. So, big opportunity. It's our game in hand on Oxford and Peterborough as well. So it's just huge for us Tuesday night. Probably biggest game of the season for us. And I think winning Saturday, getting back to winning ways, the players will be feeling good about themselves again. And yeah, I think we'll win Tuesday. I think the team will come out and play really well and perform really well. And look, we know that we've got to get a win Tuesday just to put us in 59 points, give us a chance of making the playoffs, and the players will know that and the manager will know that. So yeah, I'm confident. I said on our pod, I think we'll win it 2-0 And I'm going to stick with that. I think we'll win Tuesday.
Yeah, fair enough. Entitled to be confident, I think, given how things are going on both ends. Well, look, Matt, thanks very much for joining us. As always, a pleasure. And yeah, we'll see how it goes on Tuesday then.
Yeah, look, thanks for having me on. Best of luck for the rest of the season.
Thanks very much for that, Tom. Relentlessly positive, as always, Matt. Kasper, how do you feel about the prospect of trying to play Stevenage away under some floodlights?
Nice to have a positive Matt, isn't it? What a nice feeling. Not great, mate, to be honest. I think we knew these three games, Peterborough and then Stevenage, then Bolton away, was going to be difficult. I think what we're probably witnessing, without going too negative, is it's just the realisation of what we thought was going to be a very tough three games. To be honest, I think on the new manager, obviously, we've got to hope maybe there's some positive news around that soon, some good rumours circling around people being at the ground for the Peterborough game. So fingers crossed there's a bit of something in that
Is that good? Is that good? Like if we have an incredibly decorated manager sat in the stand potentially interested for the Posh game, do they come away from that going, yeah, I'm well up for that?
Leave that well alone.
But do you know what? Might just see what else comes up, you know?
Honestly, I mean, oh God. I mean, there's, you know, you got to see the potential there, right? Am I looking forward to Stevenage under the lights?
If the lights work this time, obviously.
If the lights work, obviously, yeah. As an obvious prerequisite. It's just another game. Like, we're not in a position now in league table terms to be throwing any games away. There's simply no thing now as not an opportunity to go and try and get some points. So,
no free hits.
No such thing as free hits.
No free hits. Tom Walker says you'll get chopped by Tom Walker, apparently, if you say that any League One game is a free hit. So
this is legitimately a tough place to go, though, Tom. Are you having that?
Yeah, I think any time you play Steve Evans, this is like a proper lower league cliche, this, isn't it? Whenever you play against a Steve Evans team, you know you're in for a real evening of it. It's another really tough game. And I think, like, if we're being real and honest about everything, I think if we, you sat here before the Posh game and you ask somebody, would you legitimately take 1 point for the next three? I think a lot of people probably said, if you guarantee me 1 point, I would probably take it, to be honest.
Yeah, same.
And, that's obviously that's not changed. Look, it's a really tough game. This is clearly the easiest of them. Easiest. I use that term loosely because it's obviously not an easy game at all, but I think when you compare it to the opposition we play in Posh and in Bolton, I do think they're better teams. That said, it's a really tricky afternoon, and it's a tricky evening, I should say, for the same reasons as the Posh game is going to be difficult. It's the same reasons that the Bolton game is going to be difficult, that there's obviously a little bit of a lot of uncertainty surrounding how the team's going to be set up, who's going to be taking the games, and, obviously the same things about missing your talisman, which is just the last thing that you need when you go into games like this, really. So yeah, it's a really kind of daunting prospect, to be honest. And I remember when we were talking after the Posh game at London Road, and you're looking ahead to your next fixture, which was Northampton away at the time, like, this is the last game you want. I'll probably track back on that a little bit and say, actually, I think Stevenage away is the last game you want following a derby loss, because fuck me, going away there with Steve Evans as manager, it just feels like literally the worst thing that you could want after the week that we've had. It feels like it's kind of out of the frying pan into the fryer, to be honest. We've got to give it a go, haven't we? There's different things I'm sure we can do with the team and with the lineup, but fundamentally we're playing against a team that are known for being very robust and quite direct and quite ruthless, to be honest, this season. So look, if you come out of that with a point, you're absolutely chuffed, and you run away with it, frankly. Let's see. I'm not holding out loads of hope, as you can probably tell. But, strange things have happened. Then I was going away and beating a Stevenage team who, although they've had a good result on Saturday against Wickham, maybe haven't been as imperious as they were earlier in the season. So reasons to think we can go and get something, not a free hit, and hopefully we'll be feeling a little bit more positive come end of play on Tuesday. And if the lights do go out again, then we always know we've got a good backup option in a lovely little Tuesday evening karaoke session in Stevenage.
Ireland's in the stream, back on. Kasper, how would you line up for this? Mark's asked, how damning is it that Bonn still isn't deemed good enough to start? I suppose he's obviously forgetting the fact that he started on Tuesday against Bolton. But would you start Bonn rather than Catch up front for this?
I think we have to, right? We're so ineffective for 70 minutes of that Peterborough game that we've got to try something. Also, I mean, I know Barry Cole might not be long-term our first team manager, but you expect him to stay in the fold. They've got to kind of protect Macaulay Bond's morale a bit. You know what I mean? Like, if he's not getting starts, if he can't get a start after that performance in a goalless game, then, you know, particularly knowing that he was one of Neil Harris's pretty sort of trusted guys as well, I don't think it really sends the right message. So
there's still a player in there as well. Like, it's similar to the discussion we're having around like Ryan Bennett and Jordan Cousins and stuff. Like, these are guys that have got it. Like, we're not talking about, and this is why it's really more frustrating with him, to be honest. Like, you know, obviously Macaulay Bond's career has been a bit weird, I guess, like Neil Harris's was before he joined us, and that, like, you kind of do, you're relatively underwhelming in the league below, and you come into a team like Cambridge, where, you know, you kind of need to perform at the level above, and it always feels a bit unlikely that's going to be the case, that his stage of his career, he's going to be able to kind of switch it back on at a higher level. But, like, he's done it. Like, he's done it before. Like, you know, we're not talking about a rubbish footballer here, are we? We're talking about someone who's got pedigree at this level, played well in the one above, and, you know, obviously, hopefully in weeks to come, we know he can kind of complement, hopefully, what will be a strike partner in Lyle Taylor pretty well. So, I'd agree with Casper. I think he's got to come back in. I think he's got to start. I'd probably leave Catch in there, to be honest with you, because I think of everyone, I think, you know, him and Kai Kai, actually, I think they're the ones that look most threatening. But I'd kind of like to see him more advanced, because I think the one thing that Matt was talking about there, and I know it's something that he and Steven has been very positive on, is, like, particularly at Pierre Gianni, it is just a real rock at the back for them. You know, it feels like we've come up against some centre-backs in years gone by who've just been a constant thorn in our side. I think back to, like, Steve McNulty when he was at Luton. Like, we could never get past him. Christian Burgess at Pompey.
I knew you were going to say Christian Burgess. Yeah, Always remember that game.
Like, the amount of time that I've seen the ball ricochet off his forehead, it feels like it's hundreds of times, like we were discussing earlier. And Pierre Gianni is one of those. So you've got to give him something more to think about than just Kachunga. As good as I think he is, and I think as valuable as he's been for us in the last few weeks, like, you've got to occupy the centre-backs, I think. Because if you let Steve Evans' teams win that battle, you're really up against it, I think.
Yeah, we've got to keep the ball on the carpet, right? Do you know what I mean? It's like, I guess what the plan is.
More so than against Posh.
Yeah, I guess the plan that we had for Peterborough was probably something quite similar, which is like, just keep the ball on the deck. I just don't think we had the courage to move it around more. I think we've got to be a bit braver with the ball. Like, I want to see George Thomas trying to pick the ball up more. I want to see Langster doing more. I do think he did it right on Saturday, but, like, talk about Wes all day. But Wes was like, willing to lose the ball. Do you know what I mean? You need to be willing to lose the ball to have the bravery to actually drop in those little pockets and pick it up and know that it's not a disaster. Like, you can lose the ball, you'll get it back. You need to go and do it again and again and again. Because if you keep making yourself available to be a proper playmaker, which is what I want to see more from George Thomas, more like, more courage, more just more bravery, more willingness to lose the ball, because you'll be able to make something really good happen if you put yourself in those positions time and time again. We've got to move the ball quick, keep going with the early crosses. Like, I mean, there are only little glimmers against Peterborough, but at least we were doing the right thing. Like, if you level a criticism at Mark Bonner, those teams used to really, like, labour that build-up play and do it real slow, and we'd be back to the fullback and then on the edge of the box and fullback again. Eventually we'd get a crossing when this whole, you know, team we're playing has got their whole eight people in the box ready to head it away. Like, we simply can't let that happen. So we've got to be crossing the ball, early low crosses into, like, feet of a front post running sort of striker is definitely the right thing to do. I think that's it. I mean, the same thing I would say for any game. We've just got to go at them. Like, we've got to bear in mind that Stevenage are the same as us in the last five games form, basically. Like, they've got 4 points in the last five games. We've got 3 points in the last five games. So, like, they're not on great form, just like Peterborough weren't. We just need to get that. We just need to have a go at them, basically.
There's your game plan, Barry. Predictions, Casper?
I think we'll lose 2-0. I think I'll just grind us down, to be honest. Yeah. I think they'll just grind us down. I'm just worried we, in a similar way to Peterborough, we just struggle to find a way to really be effective going forward. And if they've done their homework, which is one thing you can absolutely guarantee a Steve Evans team will have done, they're going to press us high. They're going to not let us play out from the back. We have to, is the thing. Like, there's no other game plan for us. We cannot simply get drawn into playing the ball long. Like, my prediction as well, and layered on that, Bond starts, and he plays quite shit because we're going to smash a ball at his head for 90 minutes. Like, good luck, Macaulay Bond. It's not what he wants, do you know what I mean? But you can almost see it coming at the moment. So we need to have more courage. Fullbacks need to be shown, like, when in that, for those goal kicks and set plays, we need to actually be willing just to play the ball out from the back. Even if Stevens is going to press us really high, we need to back ourselves and the centre midfielders to show for the ball, pick it up and actually create stuff. Because if we're just smashing the ball at Macaulay Bond's head, can't hope the floodlights do go out, to be honest.
With any luck. Tom, what's your prediction?
Well, I'm glad the away end's already sold out, because if we were looking to shift tickets, Casper's sort of appraisal of how he expects it to look is it's probably not the not quite the hard sell maybe the club would have been looking for, if they were looking for anything at all. So that's obviously good news. I think, like, we're going to be in for a really tough evening, right? And, you know, nobody would seriously suggest otherwise, I think. Yeah, I think it's really easy to foresee the scenario that Casper says, where, like, you come out of it and you're just talking about, like, how naively we've played and that we've played exactly into their hands. And look, similar to Casper, I find it really hard to come out with anything, you know, a prediction that's that far off his. To be honest, I think it could be, you know, 2 or 3 nil. Really depressing evening in the away end, and you're just happy that it's not too far away from home, to be honest.
Fucking hell.
If anyone is listening to this on the way into work on Monday morning, have a good week. It will get better.
Don't do it. It's not worth it.
Yeah. It will get better at some point, I promise. But please just allow us this
this moment.
Yeah, this kind of moment of wallowing in our own grief, to be honest, because we're all, I think, pretty beaten by the week that we've had, to be honest. And
well, okay, look, so you say it's going to get better at some point. Let's end by having a quick chat about potential next managers. I think we might have a bit of a longer chat about this on the preview show on Thursday, assuming that nothing happens between now and then. Tom, let's start with you. Daniel says the club needs to have a new head coach in before the Northampton and Reading games, and I assume the Lincoln game as well, which is in between those. This group of players needs motivating and energising to ensure we stay up. Do you agree? And in a perfect world, who do you want that to be?
I agree, like, totally with that. Like, I guess it's kind of an obvious thing to say, right, that you kind of need a bit of nous in there now, and it feels like, you know, Barry Cole has been, I think, fairly open and honest as you'd like him to be, really, about, you know, maybe his situation, and that he doesn't feel it's the right time for him, which maybe doesn't feel you feel you've, like, loads of confidence what's going to happen while we don't have a manager, so naturally it means that you need somebody in, right? I think the things that have been doing the rounds are that Duff and Ainsworth were at the game on Saturday. I don't know if that's true. I didn't see them. So, maybe someone else out there that did see them can confirm. But if Duff is interested, move heaven and earth to get him in the door, because he is a quality manager at this level. I'm slightly surprised here that he's genuinely interested in it, to be honest, more than anything, if that is the case. The other one's Rowett. I think both kind of similar situations, really, managers who maybe might expect or you could expect to do better and probably still have, you know, maybe envisage their careers at higher levels and maybe with a place to rekindle a successful managerial career. Work for Neil Harris, it might work for you guys. So let's see. But, like, for me, it's one of them two.
Which would you have if you had the choice?
I think I'll probably go Duff, to be honest. I like, obviously the short term is the important bit at the moment, and that's staying up this season, but I believe he would be the one that could, you know, really kind of work out a plan with these players. I think he's been shown to be quite tactically flexible throughout his career. Did a fantastic job with Cheltenham, who were you know, we've talked about it quite a lot, really, in the last couple of years, but their progression has really mirrored our own in many ways. And I think similar clubs with similar sorts of probably ambitions, probably our ambitions may be a little bit higher than Cheltenham's, if we're being honest, in the longer term, certainly. And for me, he'd be the one who would give you a really good outlook for going into next season as well. Rowett would as well, like, obviously. And if I'm totally honest, like, a lot of the other options don't massively inspire me. So unless there's somebody out there, like, I look at an Ainsworth and I think, yeah, like, you did a really good job with Wickham, like, that can't be forgotten. But I mean, he's just David Brent, isn't he? Like, you know, his stuff at QPR, it just gives me the horrible feeling that it might just all kind of unfurl and just all fall apart. But you know, we do need somebody in who can bring a bit of something and a bit of experience, and who can just lift things, really. And for me, yeah, like I say, if Duff is available, is interested, get the contract signed ASAP because he's a hell of a manager.
Completely agree, personally, but I'd be pretty happy with either Duff or Rowett. Kasper, same question to you, and also to bring up a point that we talked about after the game yesterday, which was that it's kind of a bizarre situation because it feels like we sort of need two different managers, like one for the rest of this season and then one for next season, right? Not to say that someone like Duff, who maybe is your sort of long-term ideal appointment to sort of build a club around almost, wouldn't be able to keep us up this year, but I think, you know, it was your point and your point, and I completely agree with it. What's your view on it all?
I'm just doing the odds list again because it always makes me laugh.
Oh,
man.
So good.
So good. When you get
what's
down,
on there? What are the current odds?
When you get down to like 33 to 1, 40 to 1 region.
You get like Sam Allardyce in there.
Fucking brilliant. John Terry.
John Terry.
JT.
Do it, mate.
Was it him or Lampard that had property in Cambridge or was rumoured to
have Lampard. Hey, this is one of the biggest Cambridge myths that
this is great. This is like when Cesc Fabregas' wife like started studying at Cambridge University and everyone started was like, yeah. Yeah, done deal.
Frank Lampard, like near Hills Road College is, there's that Travelodge just by the Cineworld.
Yeah.
Everyone always says that Frank Lampard owns that, but I think it's got to be one of the biggest pieces of Cambridge myth bullshit.
It can't be true. I guess it could be true. He's probably got the finance around to have quite the portfolio,
I guess. Yeah.
Mate, it's 6-1 for Duff, Rowett and Gary Monk.
Gary Monk is 6-1.
He's closing in.
Chopped in, is he? That's an interesting one because everyone's always talking about Duff and Rowett, but Monk's not really had. It's not had the sort of
And then
the rumour mill swirl around him.
Ainsworth is 8-1 here. Like Tionic, this is another one. I was going to do a classic Casper. Like I don't know enough about football to work out who we should appoint next as our manager. Rowlett's also got links to the club. Seems like he's done all right. Duff also seems like he's done all right. I think he might be a bit above our pay grade, but I've no idea what the situation is. Obviously, if you think about potential compensation for Harris and or the squeakiness of the bums if we do lose against Stevenage and Bolton might actually might weirdly think actually losing these next two games might precipitate a higher profile manager that might work out better long term. It's the only optimistic thing about losing the next two games, maybe. So I don't have strong feelings, but obviously I hope whoever it is actually in it for the long haul, basically. Not like that.
I was gonna kind of throw a question out there for you guys, really. Like, you know, you obviously mentioned wanting someone in for the long haul, and obviously the ideal thing is that you just bring in a manager who sees us over the line really comfortably this season, then can start building something on into next season. But do you reckon there's any part of the thinking of the board now that is just like, don't worry about next season at all just yet? Like, could you see us bringing someone in
until the end of
the season and then reevaluating it in the summer?
Their plan A, if I had to completely guess what you're saying before, was that they would hope that from the three hard games that Cor and Betsy could like scare up 4 points or something, get into the early 40s points wise. And then you sort of think, well, just let these guys keep rolling until April or whatever and try and appoint someone before the end of the season, but do it knowing that we've got the points tally and we're going to be fine, I think was probably the plan. But I really think we're going to have it. It's going to get quite sobering quite fast if we do lose these next two, unfortunately, and suddenly staring down the barrel a little bit of, you know, running out of games left this season. So I think there's a chance they could appoint someone to the end of the season, but it doesn't really fit our DNA, right? We're all about like stability and continuity and like all of this. Like, I would be totally really surprised if they put an interim in because they just don't want the upheaval. And also the want to get the transfer planning right. Obviously, need to work on targets already, probably. Like, I just don't know if it works for us.
It really doesn't feel like the way that we're run at the moment to only think about the sort of short term in that respect and just hire a sort of firefighter. I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, Tom. I think it's the most important thing. The sort of flip side to that is the most important thing for the football club is to be in League One next season. So whatever the best way to ensure that we can do that, That will be a part of their thinking, I'm sure. But I think Castle's spot on that their plan A is see what happens between now and Bolton, but have a candidate, you know, be looking for candidates between now and then, but maybe take a bit more time with it if it looks like that we'll probably be okay with Betsy and Cor till the end of the season, just to make sure that next appointment is like someone that the club can really build around. Anyway, look, let's
that list. Sorry, just very quickly, of that list, who do you think would be the funniest ones that we could get?
I mean, is Sam Allardyce on that list?
Sam Allardyce is on that list.
No, that's hilarious, surely.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at Sean Derry 25-1, I'm thinking that could be absolutely hilarious.
I think John O'Shea would be quite a...
John O'Shea, yeah, there we go. Yeah. Is Roy Keane on that list?
He's not.
Yeah, he is 25.
Oh, is he?
25.
They're offering it. Other bookies are available. Yeah, for me, I was looking at Sean Derry, 25-1, which would be hilarious, obviously. Lee Johnson, just because it would be horrendous.
Terrible, yeah.
And he's not on the list, but I mean...
Joey Barton.
I mean, like, obviously don't do that. Like, obviously don't entertain it. I'm sure we wouldn't. I'm sure we'd throw his CV in the bin the second it came through. But can you imagine?
Why is Dwight York on this list? Has he managed anyone ever? Like, 20-1, Dwight York.
It's got to be a wider discussion point. Like, the bookies can't be taking much money on this because, like, like, how do they throw these lists together? It's incredible.
It's the same, some of these guys, it's the same list for every League One or Championship club. It's just still in a different order, basically.
They must literally just have, like, a database of, like, managers that they feel are linked to that certain level. So League One, it's these guys. League Two, it's these guys. And it's probably dictated a little bit by, like, location as well. So if, like, their last club was in or around London, then they go on the list. And if not, then they don't. Damien Duff, that'd be pretty interesting. Maybe bring Wes back. That'd be
I was gonna say a bit of a Wes link there. Who knows? Wes in the dugout. That'd be amazing. All right, lads, let's wrap this up. We've been speaking for long enough today, but I think we'll do a bit more manager chat on Thursday's show. Like I say, we've got loads of pods going out this week. So obviously, you've got this one. We've got a special interview going out on Tuesday, which George did. Then we've got a mailbag later on in the week, as well as the preview show. So loads to get into. Make sure you're subscribed at www.undertheabbeystand.com. And goodbye, Tom. Thank you for indulging me tonight.
Yeah, absolutely no problem at all. I guess last question again, just like, do you reckon the special that's going out, do you reckon he'd be interested?
Who?
The guy George spoke
to. That guy?
He'll obviously be like later in the week.
Well, we're trying to keep it a secret, but when it drops into people's feeds tomorrow, they can make their mind up. I really hope he's not interested.
I really hope we're not interested.
Sorry. That's what I mean.
We've got extra respect to him, so obviously he gave us his time, and we massively appreciate that. But look, this has been another quite terrific group therapy session. It's becoming quite the norm, this, isn't it? So
it is.
Hopefully we can just get on a level footing in the next few weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Caspar, thank you very much, mate.
Sorry for bumming you all out on a Monday, everyone.
Everyone. Too late for that, mate.